Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends. I'm just trying to make a little money. My job, not just to entertain, but to educate, to teach. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. We got to stop fretting about how so much of our gains are concentrated in tech stocks and start thinking about why that's the case and how it may not be nearly as worrisome as you might think, especially after a day where the Dow gained 224 points, S&P advanced 0.76%, tech-laden NASDAQ jumped 1.12%. It was a wildly positive session that threatens to make the month of January a darn good one. That's right. I say that the market's concentration and fixation on tech's a lot less nefarious than you might believe. That's one of the reasons why we own the Super Six for my charitable trust, meaning Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, Meta Platforms, and of course, NVIDIA, which, by the way, is roaring after hours because of a fantastic set of numbers from Supermicro, which, if you stay tuned, you will hear from later. It will be a treat, but only if you're bullish. I'm also not panicked by the market's supposed lack of breath, because if I had sold out on this fear, I would have missed days like today, a day where interest rates fell dramatically after we learned that the government doesn't need to borrow as much money as we thought. That is terrific news, people, in a market where money managers are very worried about a potential tsunami of government bonds wiping them out. More importantly, I don't worry about the concentration of winners in tech because, alas, the concentration makes sense, and it does so in a really bullish way. See, rather than fearing the narrow breadth, you need to know why. It's the clients, stupid. That's right. You need to start thinking about what a company makes and whom it makes it for. When we're dealing with tech, their products are largely made for what we call the enterprise, for businesses, not individuals. And the enterprise has a lot of money to spend. But if your clients are hostage to the consumer, you're struggling mightily to make the numbers. In other words, it's not about tech versus non-tech. It's about the enterprise versus the consumer. And I like that dichotomy. I want to start with the Shopworn Magnificent Seven, the suddenly atavistic rubric for the winners in the market because Tesla no longer qualifies. We've always thought of Tesla as technology on wheels, a robot car. That's because Elon Musk taught us to think that way. He bridles when people call it a vehicle, which is a consumer product. That was fine as long as demand held up. Now demand's headed down, and it's no longer technology on wheels. It's a company that sells cars. Cars that are bought by stretched consumers who don't have enough money to afford them, especially because financing charges are so high. Let's go back to that miserable Tesla conference call last week where Musk wouldn't admit that there are actual demand problems. It reminded me that when you're selling to the enterprise, you don't have to go on and on about affordability. You price your product, and it's usually take it or leave it. And if the product's any good, they take it, especially if you know how to sell. Not so the worried consumer. Tesla actually had a double whammy this quarter. Its enterprise business went off the rails after Hertz, which had ordered 100,000 Teslas, decided to shed 20,000, a third of the ones that had already taken delivery. Why? Well, they were too costly to repair. There were plenty of repairs given that people didn't really know how to drive them. I know Tesla stock rallied today. Yay. And that makes sense. It's an acolyte stock, a false idol worshipped by growth managers who can't seem to resist but don't really understand anything that I'm talking about. As I see it, someone who wants a Tesla would be willing to buy a used one from a dealer who's helping Hertz unload their excess. But right now, these are a bust at the enterprise level, and they need price cuts to sell more, and they're not getting them. They're not cutting prices like I think they should. Compare Tesla's clients to those of tomorrow's standout string of earnings. Let's go through them. Microsoft sells the enterprise. I expect them to have a terrific quarter. Companies buy their stuff. Companies use their AI. Individuals are small potatoes for Microsoft. AMD, enterprise. What's making AMD stock rally so powerfully are its advanced chips that rival NVIDIA's for use in artificial intelligence. AMD has a considerable consumer group, but they don't sell to the consumer. They sell to the PC makers like HP or Dell. Now, you might think that Alphabet's consumer, and you would be wrong. The client is the advertiser, and advertisers see Google as one of the few places where they can reach shoppers without paying through the nose to do so. But Starbucks, for the moment, that's the consumer. Because the consumer's strapped in China, and because many Americans in many, so I should say some Americans, in many cities have been scared away from Starbucks by these pro-Palestinian protesters, who don't seem to realize that Starbucks has no real connection to Israel. If the numbers are weak, though, analysts will say, true or not, that the consumer can afford a $5 coffee and is trading down and away from pricey coffee, which is why we've been telling members of the club, please wait till we see the whites of their eyes. Then we'll make a decision on whether to buy more because it's such a great brand. Or take Thursday, where you got Amazon, Meta, and Apple. You may think that Amazon's all about the consumer, but that's just not the case. Amazon's also about the advertisers and the many businesses that use Amazon Web Services. That's right, it's part consumer, but part big enterprise. Amazon Web Services helps enterprises that want to be in the cloud. You almost never use the cloud except for as a backup for your photos. Companies use the cloud all the time to better serve you. Meta Platforms, again, you probably think, hey, wait a second, you're the client. And that's true if you're buying their VR headsets, but it's not true if you're using Instagram or Facebook. In that case, you're the product. The clients are advertisers trying to reach you in a soft, unobtrusive way. Meta is exactly how I'd like to reach people because it's so targeted as to almost guarantee a good return. But Apple? Consumer. It has very little enterprise exposure, which means it can be vulnerable to the same weakness as Tesla. That's why people are so fearful of a huge guide down, a slashing for the next quarter, not this one, when Apple reports. I'm worried that the bears will get a hold of the release and trash the heck out of it, talking about how a cash-strapped Chinese consumer isn't buying the new phone, while the Vision Pro headsets are too pricey and too unaffordable. Still, I say own Apple, don't trade it. You have to go through this morass every quarter. Now, let's circle back to what I said at the top. Yes, you can argue that this market's way too narrow. I come right back at you and say it's only as narrow as the customer. Right now, businesses are shockingly flush, having refinanced when rates were low, and many are racking up record profits. They aren't burdened by student loans or sky-high inflation or expensive rentals. Companies don't go to the supermarket. They don't pay auto or home insurance. They don't go to the hospital. They are, yes, indeed, flush, while the consumer is indeed cash-strapped. If you're a business, who do you want to sell to? If you're an investor, what company shares do you want to buy in? Bottom line, it's not about tech versus everything else. Stop that. Get that out of your head. We have a market made up of companies that sell into the enterprise, and those stocks are doing fabulously. Then we have even more companies who serve the consumer, which is a much less attractive customer base right now. And their stocks? They're very tough to own. Lucas in Rhode Island. Lucas!
Jim, thank you for taking my call. I'm an investment club member.
Thank you.
I'm a little scatterbrained at this point. I'm 32 years old, so I'd like to think I'm long on time.
You are.
I'm wondering about Navitas at this moment. I know it's a little expensive compared to some peers, but I'm looking at future trends, not the current ones.
I know, and it does have quantum computing, but it's losing a lot of money. Here's my take. If you want to look at future trends, you have to look at current trends. And current trends are for companies like, yes, NVIDIA. They'll figure it out. Jim in California. Jim.
Mr. Kramer, thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in your thoughts on the golf stock that has been a swing and a miss for me as of recently, Topgolf Callaway MODG. With the stock down 30% in the last 6 months, I'm beginning to worry this is a COVID double bogey, and the new clubs that people bought during the pandemic are just collecting dust in the garage. What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm not a good call on this one because I think it should be a good stock. Now, you could say, well, listen, Jim, don't make your judgment now. Take a long-term view. But I thought it would have moved by now. All that said, I'm sticking by it. But again, there are other people obviously more right than I am who would suggest that it's not a good buy. How about we go to Lamont in Tennessee? Lamont.
Jim! Hey, I need you in Nashville. It's Hot Chicken Week, and this is my second invitation to you.
You know, I hear you, and my wife's probably going to go there before I am because I'm tethered to the desk. Brett, can you get rid of that? Go ahead.
All right. Hey, I am diversified in my investments, a couple hundred thousand in some indexes, but I have 48,000 of mad money that I put into Mercado Libre with a 7-year play on it. What do you think about that?
I think it's an amazing company. Now, first of all, I'm going to go to Nashville at your invitation. I don't know exactly where I'm going to hang out. But I will tell you this. Mercado Libre, I was an original investor in this company, and I could not believe when I was at the manager team how great these guys are. And, Gino, I had to sell my stock. I can't own stocks. But I have never wavered in my belief that Mercado Libre is really more of an Amazon than it is an eBay of Latin America, and it is a must-own. The market is not about tech versus everything else. It's about the enterprise, which is doing fabulously versus the consumer. This is Oh, man, I'm going to tell you, Super Microcomputer is proving to be super investment. It's up nearly 75% in the last month, and this thing is flying after the close. I'm going to get the latest on the story from the company's top brass, fresh off the earnings. Then speculative investors are shorting grains. Ooh, that could be a risky move. I'm planting some seeds for home gamers when we go off the charts. And the sports world has gone digital with a host of big streaming deals from Netflix to Apple. And with NASCAR getting the action, I'm learning more about the changing landscape with NASCAR president Steve Phelps. What a story. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There are hot stocks, and then there's Super Microcomputer, the IT hardware company that makes advanced servers, storage solutions, and other tech components, all of which are incredibly hot demand in the age of artificial intelligence. Super Micro stock worked 246% last year, even better than NVIDIA. It's already up 74% since the beginning of 2024. Now, much of these gains came in the past week and a half, since Super Micro pre-announced much, much better than expected sales and earnings on January 18th. Management previously had been guiding for $2.8 billion sales for the quarter. Then they said it'll be north of $3.6 billion. Now, tonight, we got Supermicro's full quarter of the report. Not only were the results amazing, but they gave very strong guidance for the next quarter and raised their full-year forecast substantially. Just one good thing after another with this one, which is why the stock moved up big in after-hours trading, taking, by the way, the whole AI complex with it. Don't take it from me. Earlier today, I got to dig deeper with Charles Liang. He's the founder, chairman, president, and CEO of Supermicrocomputer. Take a look. Mr. Liang, it is marvelous to have you on Mad Money, and congratulations on all your success.
Thank you, Jim. Have an opportunity.
Oh, terrific. I know Supermicro 1, so to speak, the one that was motherboards, and then I followed 2, where you are doing more advanced systems. But we're now in Supermicro 3, which I think people should recognize is at the heart of the AI revolution.
Yes, we start from motherboard, as you may know, 30 years ago, and then computer system solution, and now we offer complete rack plug and play solution. All of those is to provide a better solution, easier solution to our customer. So customer can build their data center and have their equipment ready to online much quicker than before ever.
It is very clear to me when I go to your excellent website that your customers, whether it be Intel, whether it be AMD, or of course NVIDIA, really cannot do the things they'd like to do as fast or as well or as heat efficient if it weren't for Supermicro.
Yes, thank you to our building block solution. Since I founded Supermicro day one, 1993, we built our product based on building block solution. And the building block solution, after 30 years of refining improvement, now we are able to build a product time to market much quicker than others. And with better quality, better feature, and better inventory leverage. And that's why we are able to build a product, especially new technology, more efficient than others.
Well, let's take an example. I remember when Jensen Huang, who is a very old and dear friend of yours, introduced Grace Hopper, and basically a supercomputer that needed Supermicro to be a supercomputer. I thought it would be something that would be introduced in 2025, maybe mid-2024. How many days did it take for you to have a working model that used Grace Hopper?
You know, because we work with partners very closely, like NVIDIA. We work with them day and night. So when they have a new technology ready, we have our solution ready. So not just solution ready, but better, greener, and total solution for customer right away. So we have been enjoying working with a partner like NVIDIA and other partners as well. And also we work with customers very closely. So we study what customers need in advance. So when new technology is ready, we call customer, hey, your solution is ready here. That's why, we keep a very close relationship with all our partners, including customer, and our customer like our solution. So it's kind of a really happy team.
Well, I think also we should talk about the fact that some people will say, wait a second, that sounds like an expensive solution. But when you consider power consumption, I mean, when you consider the total cost of ownership, even though you are pretty much not white box, you're special, it does seem that there's a value proposition to using Supermicro versus the off-the-shelf stuff.
Yes, thank you. Because again, building block solution, we are able to build the solution, the platform exactly optimized for customers' workload, optimized for their data center environment. And that's why some customers believe we offer cheaper solution than others. And yes, it's lower cost because it's more optimized for their workload, for their application. At the same time, because of green computing, we have customers lower their TCO, lower their energy cost. And also help them, help everyone to lower the carbon footprint. And you know, people all care about how to preserve our planet now. So we are very happy we are able to work with partners to lower their cost and together to lower the carbon footprint.
Yes, I know Jensen over and over has expressed that to me, that the planet is our most important client, so to speak. Now, in one of the fine videos I watched you, you talked about how this AI revolution, you compared it favorably to the Industrial Revolution. Now, that's a very, very big bar. Are you that comfortable after seeing how it's going that it will be bigger than the Industrial Revolution?
Oh, very good question. Yes, I personally believe so. Industrial Revolution that happened 200 years ago, that have been changing people's lifestyle, changing the industry, offer something better, more convenient, and easier for people. And this AI generation, AI revolution, I believe will create even bigger impact than Industrial Revolution, because AI revolution not just impact so many things that's visible. For example, autonomous driving, for example, ChatGPT, industrial automation, and including our job, efficiency optimization, accuracy, more productive, but also impact also something that invisible. For example, help us improve the education system, make kids easier to learn, and for example, improve the medical system, make ourselves become more healthier. Diagnosis our problem in advance. So before people got sick, they already know they may get sick a few days later or a few months later, and they can take action to prevent that. So all of those, I believe AI revolution will be a impact, big help to mankind.
Well, that matters because obviously there's been a lot of equipment that has been bought and bought through you. So if there's that strong a demand, then I will not worry about supply. I want to thank you so much, Charles Liang, for coming on Mad Money, and I hope you will come back, and it's an honor to meet you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity for me to share Supermicro's position and our belief to the world and provide a better solution to the industry so people can save money while we work together to reduce the carbon footprint.
Thank you. Mad Money will be back after the break.
Coming up, and off the charts that'll have you ringing the dinner bell. Kramer tills the land for bushels of info on commodities. Next.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
According to last week's Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, that's a mouthful, inflation is very much moving in the right direction, up just 2.9% last month. A lot of that's thanks to lower commodity prices. But when you're dealing with commodities, you need to expect some kind of turbulence, don't you? Any kind of uptick in commodity prices makes it harder for the Fed to cut interest rates, meaning it's something we got to worry about for stocks, not just the grains. And that's why tonight we're going off the charts with Carly Garner. She's that brilliant technician who's the co-founder of DeCarly Trading, author of Higher Probability Commodity Trading, and our resident commodities expert who's done so well. Remember, this year, she pretty much nailed both the top in oil and what's increasingly looked like a very solid bottom, too. And right now, Garner says we could be looking at a serious and, I think, very surprising uptick in the grain complex because grains are simply too hated. Money managers have been shorting them like crazy, betting like shooting fish in a barrel and a huge drop in price. Of course, there's a reason grains are hated. The 2023 crop year harvest lows never materialized. Instead, grain prices have continued to dribble lower throughout the winter. And a more typical year, we'd be looking at a rally during this period. Yet, as we head into February, the grains are only moderately off recent lows. Now, there's a lot going against the grain complex. Technology has made farmers more efficient. New production came online after the grain shortage that resulted from Russia's initial invasion of Ukraine. That was a shocker. And demand from China has softened, something we didn't think would happen. But Garner thinks we could be looking at a grain rally in the not-too-distant future for the simple reason that the vast majority of the pessimists are gone. They've already sold. When you look at the all-important CFTC's weekly commitments of traders data, which shows you where different classes of investors are positioned in the futures market, Institutional investors are extremely bearish on corn, soybeans, and wheat. And whenever money managers get too bearish on anything, well, guess what? It tends to find a floor. Yeah. Got me? Let's start with a monthly chart of corn prices paired with CFTC commitment of traders data. See, these are the different kinds, and this is the actual commitment of traders COT report. Garner cares about the green line here, which shows you the net long or short position of speculators, meaning money managers. Right now, she thinks the bears are out over their skis in corn, with large speculators holding more than 146,000 net short positions on corn futures. Are you kidding me? The last time money managers were this negative was in the summer of 2020. Back then, their negativity caused a short squeeze that allowed corn prices to more than double to just under $8 per bushel. It was the type of thing that everybody was talking about, including the Fed, because it meant that things were going to get very inflationary. Corn at the basis of so much of our food. Garner doesn't expect another rally of that magnitude, but she believes the short sellers will be given a reason to cover sooner rather than later. She thinks it could be worth maybe a rally of 50 cents to $1.20 per bushel. Well, guess what? The spot price of corn is at $4.40 right now. So $1.20 move would be huge. It would also be very unexpected, and it would be very inflationary. Now, take a look at the weekly chart of the corn futures. Prior to the commodity chaos of 2021 through 2023, of course, the pandemic, Gardner points out that corn spent a decade trading very comfortably, you know, right between $3 and $4.50, anti-inflationary. We're now, though, at the high end of the historical range. If you draw an uptrend line from the spring 2020 lows to last week's lows and a downtrend line from the multiple lows made during the past few years, you'll find a nice floor of support. Well, voila, $4.30. That's about a dime below where we're currently at. At the same time, the relative strength index, or RSI, down here, okay, the RSI, that's a really important momentum indicator that I look at before I make a judgment on most stocks, has been flirting with oversold readings for several months. That's way down here, okay? That means the downside here is probably exhausted. As Garner sees it, between the massive short positions in the corn futures, the powerful floor of support, and the typical seasonal tailwind for the potential for adverse planting and growing weather, we could see a meaningful rally that takes corn to the mid-$5 area. At that point, there's a tough ceiling of resistance at 560, where any upturn would likely run out of steam. But remember, this is the basis of so much of our food, people. We can't afford to see it rally like that. Now, how about wheat? All right, check out the monthly chart with the CFTC's commitments of traders data on the bottom again. All right, now look at this. What we care about is the green line. That represents the net holdings of the large speculators. Right now, they're net short under 33,000 futures contracts, which is a lot less bearish than it was in 2023 when it got to 90,000. But it's still pretty ugly by historical standards. Garner says she can recall only one other time when money managers were so negative on wheat, in 2017, 2018. Back then, wheat found a floor, although it took a few years of sideways action before the price started chugging higher again in 2020. Put it all together, and while Garner wouldn't buy wheat right here, she thinks that that's enough justification to buy the dips as we advance to the spring. I feel if corn's going to have a big move, you're going to see a big move in wheat. All right, how about the shorter-term daily chart of wheat prices? After the huge spike from the war in Ukraine, wheat prices retreated and stabilized in late 2022 around $6 per share. Okay, so you can see, I don't want to give the story away, but you're seeing a developing reverse head and shoulders here. Ever since then, Garner thinks wheat has been putting in some sort of triple bottom, or here it is. She calls it an inverse head and shoulders. That's a very reliable chart that says that things are going up. As long as the floor support holds at $5.70, she says wheat could at least rebound to what we call the neckline, all right, which would be at $6.60. All right. And if we break out of the net line, confirming this is an inverse head and shoulders, one of the most reliably bullish patterns, as I said, that means we could see wheat at $7.60. Again, you think inflationary. I think the whole food complex would cost a lot more money. Finally, let's talk soybeans. Garner thinks that these are most vulnerable to short-term weakness. Not a believer here. Although when you look at the commitments of traders chart, you can see large speculators are net short for the first time since 2020. That's bullish. And Garner notes that any time speculators get net short soybeans, the result is a rally, although not always a sustainable rally. All right, take a look at this daily chart of soybean futures. I know a lot to work with here, but just a second. Garner predicts more near-term downside, but thinks soybeans can find a bottom anywhere between 11 and 1180. So we're looking at a bottom here with all these different lines, okay? She's betting it'll be around 1150, where soybeans found a floor of support in the spring. So you go back here, that's where they found the floor of support. If that happens, Garner wouldn't be surprised to see soybeans then rebound up to $13. Again, that would be bad for the Fed. Very close to the 200-day moving average. She doesn't expect prices to exceed that level. But if we do break out past 13, then 14 is in the cards. We don't want to see that either. Garner also noticed the relative strength index failed to make a new low. Right here, see that? While the futures price was retesting its prior low, this is what's known as a positive divergence. It means it failed to go down even more. Negative divergence would have been down there. Failed to take out that low. Positive divergence seems to her that most of the selling is behind us. I agree. But the bottom line, the charts as interpreted by Carly Garner, who's been so right, suggests that Wall Street's gotten too bearish on an incredibly important grain complex of corn, wheat, soybeans at a time of the year when all three crops tend to trade higher as the market builds in a premium to account for the risk of something going wrong between now and the harvest. Makes sense to me. That's why she's expecting a grain rally, even if it's only for a few months. Garner expects things could get really ugly for the bears. For now, though, she expects the grains to bounce, and if she's right, she'll make it much harder for the Fed to cut rates anytime soon. So the bears get hurt first, and then the bulls get hurt. But when the bears get hurt, you're going to have more pain at the supermarket and the restaurant, and then ultimately, well, let's just say it'll be too late, and market will go back down, which I don't mind, but that's not in the cards right now. Let's go to Ed in Illinois. Ed.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Club hey, man, what's up?
And your number one fan.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, buddy. That's nice. What's up?
Hey, I'm calling about BLDR, Builder First Source. It keeps going up, and I want to add more. Is this a buy, hold, or sell?
It is. This bank, you know what? I really want this company on, but here's the thing why it keeps going up. It sells at a ridiculously low multiple versus Home Depot. So what people are doing is saying, you know what? If the Home Depot's doing well, which I think it is, Builders First Source must be doing even better because they manufacture and distribute building products to the professionals, not to the do-it-yourselfers who are not doing a lot of business. This is all pro. The pro part of Home Depot is doing incredibly well. That's why it's going higher. That's why it might continue to go higher. Mike in Michigan. Mike.
Hey, Jim. How you doing? First-time caller.
Oh, I'm glad to have you on the show. What's going on?
Love the show. Listen, I'm 70 years old. I received Chessie Systems as a bar mitzvah gift. What are your thoughts on Chessie/CSX?
Well, I tell you, someone did you a solid. I like Chessie/CSX, and I'll tell you why. Because they have a guy, Joe Hinrichs, who is doing such a good job that I think you have to recognize that there's a big change going on at CSX. They're becoming more customer-oriented, they're becoming more detail-oriented, and I am saying that stock, which is $35.59, is going to $40, and you should feel very good about it. The charts as interpreted by Carly Garner suggest Wall Street's gotten too bearish on corn, wheat, and soybeans at a time of year when all three crops tend to trade higher. And that's why she's expecting a grain rally before a decline. The bears are about to get killed. All right, much more. Mad Money, move over to F1. NASCAR season is about to begin. A lot happening. I'm hearing what racing fans can expect this year with NASCAR president Steve Phelps. You'll be watching something good on Netflix tomorrow. Then there's a host of supply issues that could put a damper on the oil cohort. So is the group still investable? I'm going to give you my take. It's a little surprising. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. These days, every streaming service wants in on live programming, especially sports. And one of the most watched sports in America, along with football, is NASCAR, which just reached a new $7.7 billion media deal that includes several exclusive races streaming on Amazon Prime Video. At the same time, there's this new NASCAR docuseries premiering on Netflix tomorrow, NASCAR Full Speed. It drops all at once, so get ready for a binge. This weekend, the 2024 season unofficially starts in Los Angeles with a clash at the Coliseum 2 weeks before the official start of the season, the Daytona 500 on February 18th. So before things get rolling, I got to check in with NASCAR president Steve Phelps earlier. Take a look. Mr. Phelps, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be back, Jim.
You guys are crushing it in so many different ways. I'm not sure whether I should start with what's happening this weekend or this incredible deal you just leached with Amazon Prime. And I think because so many people watch Amazon Prime, why don't we go there? Because it's huge.
Yeah, so we did media rights deals at the end of the year. So our incumbents, Fox and NBC, we extended with them. And then we added Amazon Prime, and we added Turner Sports, WBD Sports. So really excited about what that will look like for us when we come into the 25 season. So, but Amazon specifically, you know, it's our first pure streamer at our Premier Series level, our Cup Series level. We're thrilled to have them. We're great to work with, getting our deal done. And again, we've now combined broadcast, cable, and streaming, or in Warner Brothers Discovery's standpoint, cable and streaming together.
But we know this model's worked for Formula One. You guys have been around a lot longer. You've made a lot of money for people. But I want to know, this NASCAR Full Speed, could that be like the Formula One documentary that got everybody so excited?
Yeah, so it drops tomorrow, January 30th. We're super excited about it. It's five episodes, and it looks at the last 11 races of our season, including our championship. Listen, I'm super biased, but it's spectacular.
Is it really?
And we think that it will have the same kind of effect on the casual fan, getting people to consider NASCAR as one of their new sports.
Well, tell me more about it. I mean, are all five coming out, or when?
Yeah, they're all coming out. So you can binge tomorrow.
Fantastic.
And it's just fantastic. The company that did that, Words and Pictures, who produced it, they're terrific. And Netflix, that was their choice for us. And they did a tremendous job. And it's kind of like the F1 thing. It's visually exciting, but we've got great storylines, you know, the personality development, and just seeing the cars on the racetrack and the crashes and all of it. And as the stories develop.
So even if you watched every single race, you're still going to think that it's just a great narrative.
Absolutely.
That is fantastic. Now tell me about, I watched the ads this weekend for Daytona 5. I never missed Daytona because that's how the season starts. But no, not this. You got Clash. Now this is something for this weekend to get people's appetites whetted.
It is. So it's an exhibition event. So we built a track inside the LA Coliseum. So this is actually the third year we've done it. So there's a quarter mile racetrack in there, you know, kind of tight quarters in this, you know, iconic facility that's a century old. It's just it's a really neat event and a little more casual than the Daytona 500, where the stakes are obviously really high.
But you don't mind doing street races either, do you?
Well, so last year was our first ever street race in the streets of Chicago around July 4th. And other than the biblical rain, we had 7 inches of rain on that Sunday. But we got it in. It was a phenomenal event as the sun was setting over the skyscrapers of Chicago. The city embraced us. It was a great look for this sport. 80% of the people who purchased tickets there had never been to a NASCAR race. So it was a special race. And we're going to go back there in July again.
Well, you know, that's important because we've always been close to NASCAR. We did many, many years ago, we did a special with NASCAR. And it had this rural roots idea. But Chicago tells me that it's a national idea. It's not a rural roots idea.
Yeah, so we're trying to balance things, right? So we went to North Wilkesboro last year, which is a historic track.
Right,
we hadn't been
right.
there in 30 years, which is where our All-Star event was. We're going to go back there as well. We have a new track, a new facility on the track, Iowa, that will be this summer as well. We've never raced there in our Cup Series, so the good folks from Iowa will be thrilled to have us there. And we're trying to keep things fresh and moving. So, yes, true to, you know, kind of the history of NASCAR and the DNA, but the new NASCAR also is doing things that are bold and innovative and things that haven't been done before, like the Chicago street race. We're going to do it this year without the rain, though.
I hope so. Now, you're still doing the 200-mile-an-hour billboard. I mean, that is still the best way to connect with how many people in this country?
Yeah, there's 80 million fans consider themselves fans of the sport. We're going to build on that and build on that. So our attendance is up, our ratings are up. We're having a moment, and we just got to keep it going.
I remember speaking to your advertisers, the return on investment. Now, we know, look, it's great. If you get a targeted ad on Amazon, they come and they press is one thing. But just in terms of branded advertising, people always tell me it is still the single best way to get your name out there.
Yeah, I think people think of sponsorship, and it's synonymous with NASCAR. I think the reason why is because we have quality fans. It's not the quantity of fans. And quality, what I mean by that is they understand the importance of sponsorship to our sport. And so they support brands that support their drivers or their racetracks or NASCAR, and they go invest in it, right? They support them with their wallet.
Now, because of where you are exclusively, because you had relationships with linear TV, so to speak, are you surprised about an Amazon, Netflix being so interested, and is that the future?
So I think it's... I don't know what the future is.
Okay, that's good. I'm kind of good. Keep it open-ended.
So linear television is super important, right? So we have broadcast, we have cable, and now we have, as I said, a mixture of cable and streaming from Warner Brothers Discovery. But Amazon's, from a sports standpoint, is here to stay. What they've done with the NFL, obviously, what they're going to do with us. There'll be other sports properties, I'm sure, that they will bring into the fold. They do a great job.
You do a great job. I want to congratulate you. Since I've seen you last, this is amazing. And you've gone and taken the next level. I'm a huge believer in streaming. I think you're going to crush it, all right?
Thank you, Jim.
That's Steve Phelps, president of NASCAR. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, pop open those umbrellas and tee up your toughest questions. Kramer takes on all comers in the lightning round. Next.
You say the name of stock, I said about my stuff. I don't know the cause of the stock was dead. My step is good. You play the sound. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Dad, cover the lightning round. I'm going to start with Steve in Indiana. Steve!
Hi, Jim. I've been following you since your days with Larry Kudlow.
My old friend Lyre.
My stock in October of 2022 is at 549. Today it closed at 438. I still am getting a 6% dividend yield, even at the 438 level. The stock I'm calling about is Northrop Grumman.
You know, I got to tell you, Steve, this has got to be one of the most hated stocks. Every morning I come in and somebody says, cutting numbers, cutting price target, cutting numbers, cutting price target. I, at this point, am willing to go against them and say that at 438, I'm finally ready to pull the trigger, at least on a quarter of a position. It's just too low. I want to go to Sandra in Ohio. Sandra.
Booyah, Jim, from Youngstown, Ohio.
I've been there, and it's actually quite nice.
Well,
went to a wedding there.
We love our town.
Yep.
Love it. Long-time listener, huge fan.
Oh, thank you.
My question would be, what is your opinion on John Dean Technology?
You know, I remember this. I regarded this as like an Investor Business Daily stock. I actually am quite fond of this company. I wish they would come on the air. It's a little quirky, but it's good. And, Global Industrial Food has always been one of my faves. I need to go to Oren in New York. Oren!
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
I'm doing all right. How about you, Oren?
I'm pretty good.
All right.
Well, I'm really good.
Okay, well, what's the matter? Good. What's the matter?
AMC has got me in a hole.
Well at all. No, we don't want Oren. We don't want AMC. AMC is not doing well. We want stocks to go higher. And, I'm not saying you have to go buy super microcomputer, but let's understand the consumer's not going to the movies like they used to. Why not go buy Netflix? A little antidote to the it's been right every time. Okay, I'm going to Mandy in Maryland. Mandy.
Hello, Professor Kramer.
Well, thank you, Mandy.
Long-time viewer. Thank you for taking my call and teaching us how to invest and become better investors.
That's the goal. Thank you.
And I shout out to your staff and you all. Thank you.
Staff is brilliant.
I was wondering, should I hold on or sell PCOR?
That's a very, very expensive stock. I mean, I've looked at that company a lot and don't understand why it could be this expensive given the fact that we aren't making any money. So I say ka-ching, ka-ching on some of that one, all right? And thank you for the kind words. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, how the game has changed for oil, China, Russia, and the squeeze on U.S. energy stocks explained next.
Oil will go higher some way, somehow, but as long as the Russians are able to ship crude through the Suez Canal, as long as the U.S. produces 13.3 million barrels, a new record, and as long as China remains in slowdown mode, there simply isn't enough demand to meet the surging supply. While I think that oil can bounce here, that might not do much for the oil stocks, because each one of these supply issues keeps putting a damper on the whole group. That's why, despite what seems like constantly escalating Mideast tensions, I haven't been willing to pound the table in the oil stocks deal, a position quite at odds with history. Right now, for example, Russia needs to fund its war against Ukraine. The West thought it could impact Russia with all those sorts of sanctions, but Russia's still allowed to export oil to all countries like in China and India, and Russia produces 10.6 million barrels a day. That can finance a war and then some. This weekend, I read that the group which has made Red Sea shipping so dangerous, the Houthis, don't want to hit Russian tankers with their missiles, at least not intentionally. So far, they mistakenly shot at two of them. But they have a deal with Russia to let their oil go through. At the same time, our domestic producers have stepped up to pump a record amount, and they could do more, not good for pricing. It's the demand side, though, that's the real issue. China's economy is growing so slowly that it can't use as much oil as Russia pumps. China buys 47% of that. India takes 32%. The rest is scattered among a handful of countries. It wasn't always like this. In 1973, OPEC slapped our country with an oil embargo after we resupplied Israel during the Yom Kippur War. That led to the price of oil to more than triple from $2.90 to $11.65 as we frantically attempted to replace the lost OPEC crude with other sources. At the same time, the U.S. produces 9.6 million barrels a day then and imported 36% of our oil. Now, though, when you factor in imports from Canada, our country is energy self-sufficient. That makes an oil spike almost an impossibility without Russian cutbacks. And as long as the war rages, they can't afford to cut back. Or you need the Chinese government to stimulate their economy with something dramatic, theoretically possible. But the Communist Party hates most stimulus, and I can't see them doing enough to really bolster the price of oil. It's true that non-Russian oil tankers have been going around the Cape of Good Hope, and that can drive up the price of some imported goods, but not by as much as you think. Insurance and shipping costs have spiked. Great for the tanker stocks, by the way. But again, it's not changing things too dramatically. Besides, it's one-off. I know that many of you who lived through the gas lines of the 70s can't believe that oil isn't flying higher, given what's going on in the Middle East. It actually went down! But Russia and the United States are in charge of pricing these days, not OPEC, which, by the way, is showing no signs of wanting to hit us with an embargo. They don't seem to mind that our government's once again resupplying Israel just like it did 50 years ago. And even if OPEC did mind, they don't have the juice to do anything about it. Without a spike in demand, not a cutback in supply, oil's going to be constrained. The oil stocks will not make you the fortunes they used to with this identical set of circumstances for the past 50 years. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise I'll try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.